America has given the Negro people a bad check. A bad, bad check. A check which has come back marked insufficient funds. Now is the time. Now is the time. Now is the time.
Talk a new about on the Durban Conference. You didn't want to hear about reparations. You said you were supporting Israel, but as Africans, we have we tale to tell.
Rap. Beyonce, G-Unit and 50, Janet, Missy, Usher, P. Diddy, Outkast, Ludacris, Mason, Kanye, Bad Boy, Suge and LL Cool J, Eve, Snoop, Simmons and Lil Jon. All your help, Trinity, to sing this song, now, man. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should ask George Cullen and Condoleezza. Would they stand and deliver? Reparation. Reparation. Yeah.
A gift to man. are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio, and I would like to open up by saying Uhuru and Nanga Def and Assalamu Alaikum and Habarigani and all of those greetings. And my name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. And we came out of the box with the music of The Temptations featuring Damon Harris, who passed away on February the 18th. We'll be paying tribute to him during this first half an hour. But I would like to begin the show by thanking Chairman O'Malley Ishitella, who gave me the space on Uhuru Radio to place Diasporic Music in a spot. And I would also like to thank Archie Shepp, who gave me the concept of Diasporic Music, music made in the West but not of the West. We are of Africa, but we are not in Africa. The music that has come out of Africa, the calypso, the reggae, the hip-hop, the blues, jazz, and all of those forms are basically musics that were created because we are an African people. Now, we are paying tribute to Damon Harris. Damon Harris was born Otis Robert Harris, Jr., on July 17, 1950, and he was with the Temptations from 71 until 1975. He replaced a young man by the name of Richard Owens. We're going to be playing some Richard Owens a little bit later, who was with the Vibrations. And Damon was only 20 years old when he joined the Temps, and he was the youngest member ever to be a Temptation. And as a teenager, he had formed a Temptation tribute group called the Young Temps, a.k.a. the Young Vandals. And the group had charted with singles released on T-Nick Records, which was the Isley Brothers label. And he had a few minor hits under the name Impact after he left the Temptations. And Damon was instrumental in his former group partner, Billy Griffin, who replaced Smokey Robinson in the Miracles. Damon made that happen. And Damon had prostate cancer, and he was really involved in the struggle against prostate cancer. And he was the CEO of the Damon Harris Cancer Foundation. And prostate cancer, I believe, is what took Damon out. But we continue with our tribute to Damon Harris.
Girl of mine, listen.
I can't remember when I wish it would rain without the sunshine of her love. Listen, people, they're smooth sailing now with her. Can honestly say that love woke me up this morning and brought you no more cloudy days. If you just so happen to know what I'm talking about, I want you to raise your hands and let me hear you say, yeah, all right. Things
Day we apart, our hunger for every wasted hour.
Listening to Diasporic Music on Uhura Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond. We were listening to the music of The Temptations featuring Eddie Kendricks out front, and Eddie Kendricks recorded that with The Temptations in 1969. And he was a huge influence on Damon Harris, who we heard singing Love Woke Me Up This Morning, which is probably the best-known song that Damon recorded with The Temptations. And the person who replaced Eddie Kendricks first is Richard Owens, and he had some problems, and he had to leave the Temptations, and Damon replaced him. But we're going to be listening to two songs from Ricky Owens and the Vibrations, who are from Los Angeles, California. We're going to be listening to Oh Cindy and Misty. This is Ricky Owens and the Vibrations. On Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, and we have been listening to the music of Vibrations featuring the voice of Ricky Owens, and Damon Harris replaced Ricky Owens, and now we're going to listen to the man who replaced Damon Harris. This is Glenn Carl Leonard out of Washington, D.C., and he was living in Toronto when he joined the Temptations. This is a true reflection, and it really hurts. And we're going to be speaking with Stephen Victoria after we listen to True Reflection.
a collect call from?
Mumia Jamal.
An inmate at the State Correctional Institution at Green.
Mumia Abu-Jamal is one of the lost souls of the revolution.
Mumia, how are you dealing with all of this darkness and despair and despondency and so forth? He said, let me write about it. I'll tell the truth about it. It's a living hell. It's a nightmare.
They have contained his body, and they're trying to figure out how to shut him down entirely.
They have moved heaven and earth to stop his voice being heard in the United States.
I know a lot of political prisoners, and Mumia is locked down as hard as anyone I've ever met. But I've also never met anybody that has such a warmth and such a sense of humor and such a perspective on the world.
Mumia Abu-Jamal is a revolutionary person. So he's like a guerrilla in the jungle, in a tent in the rain, writing to the community with next to nothing.
You come through at a time that your technology was there that could go around the world. And one day we will find out that he was the voice of America. The voice of America is a fraud.
When you're pushing the lie, the truth is very threatening.
Powerful governments like to control. They love to control. And they love to silence people. They cannot silence Mumia.
And he's somebody who the state of Pennsylvania thinks needs to die.
We would not be who we are as African Americans of this day were it not for the Reverend, the prophet, Nat Turner, who brilliantly merged the religious and the political, who didn't just talk about the world to come, but fought to transform the world that is.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhura Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Los Angeles, California. And joining us on the line is Stephen Victoria. How are you doing, my good friend?
Norman, thank you for having me on. I'm doing great.
Now, you are one of the filmmakers, you and Noel Hanrahan, and you have a team of people that have produced this new film on Mumia Abu-Jamal called Long Distance Revolutionary. And I guess the first thing I wanted you to do is tell me what the film is about and how you got involved with Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Well, Norman, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was in the throes of another documentary entitled Murder Incorporated, Empire, Genocide, and Manifest Destiny. And I was attempting to tell the 500-year story of the Euro-American March of Empire across the North and South American continents in an hour and a half. And I probably ended up biting off more than I could chew and realized that about a third of the way through. But in that first third of the production, I had written and Mumia recorded 25 answers to questions that I had about American history, starting with the genocide of Native Americans and right through to the American bombardment of the Middle East. And they were 25 of, I think, Mumia's most brilliant pieces. And, excuse me, the film didn't work out for various reasons. But as I started to target a new film, those 25 answers were really resonating with me. He just did some amazing work, and it sort of focused for my eye as a filmmaker what I wanted to do with the next story that I told, and that was the arc of Mumia's life from an early writer for the Black Panther newspaper when he was 14, 15 years old, and dropping out of high school, right through his 30 years on death row and the remarkable body of work he's been able to produce. So about 3 or 4 years ago, when I after I had developed sort of the outline for the film, I went to Noel Hanrahan from Prison Radio in San Francisco because she almost single-handedly has resurrected Mumia's life from the early 1990s right through to today, and it's been a Herculean task on Noelle's part, and she's brought Mumia's voice all over the world, and it's created incredible social and political impact on people the world over, and I wanted her to be part of this film, and she came into it and operated as a producer with me and my partner Katie Farzenrod, and we started to produce the film, and it's been 3.5 or 4 years, and I've told folks if I never make another film, that's okay, because Long Distance Revolutionary to me is a film of a lifetime, and it's been an absolute joy to make and to share with audiences.
Now, there was a good friend of mine who's still in the land of the living, but he's very, very ill, Elombe Bay Brath. He used to point out the fact that, you know, there's a whole lot of talk about, you know, the Russian Revolution and the evils of, you know, the Bolshevik Revolution. But he pointed out that, that's not my view, of course, but he was talking about the fact that before 1917, the United States government had intervened over 100 times in other countries. So what you were talking about, that film you're going to make, I guess you found that out yourself.
I sure did, and you know, and since then, since 1947 and the enactment of the National Security Act in 47 and 50 in the Central Intelligence Agency, the American Empire has intervened in more than 50 situations around the world. They have 700 or 800 bases all over the world. It truly is an American empire that rivals the exact control that the Roman Empire had over the planet a couple of thousand years ago. And in fact, Mumia and I right now are writing the book Murder Incorporated. When the film didn't happen, we both decided, well, we can't fit it into a 2-hour movie, but we can sure as hell fit it into a 500-page book. So we're about halfway through. A number of publishers are very, very interested in the piece, and we're not going to show it to anybody until we're done. The work has been great, and we've been mailing back and forth and writing and really polishing this piece. So I have a feeling, Norman, it's going to be something you're going to want to embrace as soon as it happens.
Well, I won the Toronto Arts Award many moons ago, and I dedicated that award to Mumia Abu-Jamal, among others, and the mayor of Toronto was in the audience, and you know, all the big people. So I was very happy about that. And also, I was able to correspond with Mumia a couple of times. I really would like to open up that correspondence again. But can we talk about how this film has been embraced, the Long Distance Revolutionary? And you're coming to Los Angeles, I think, on March the 1st, and I'm hoping to meet everyone. Are you doing something in Los Angeles on the 27th of February as well? Will you be at someplace in...
Yes, on the 27th of 27th of February, there is a there's an event by the organization, I believe it's spelled S-U-J-E, Suge, and it's in downtown L.A., and I'm sure you can look it up online, but we're going to be doing a 2-hour event to kind of help mobilize the troops. The outpouring in Los Angeles has been super. We open on March 1st, and we'll be there for a week. We hope we're going to be there for more than just 1 week, and that very first weekend is instrumental to exhibitors and distributors in the motion picture business. The business you do on the first weekend determines if you get extended. We opened in New York City at the Cinema Village in Greenwich Village on February 1, and we did phenomenal business. We were number 3 in the country for independently released films, and they extended us another week. Throughout the month of February, we're playing in Miami, Seattle, Oakland, Princeton, and a host of other cities, and we've just booked Philadelphia on May 3rd, and it looks like we're close to booking Chicago and Washington, D.C. So the film is is really, really starting to catch fire. It's starting to get legs of its own, and the audiences have been have been phenomenal. In New York, they just so embraced the film. When we had the question and answer periods after the film, the audience just didn't want to leave. They wanted to continue to talk about Mumia's story. And that's what I wanted to do. You know, the film doesn't focus on Mumia's case whatsoever. And there's been a lot of critics out there that can't see past that. And they almost act like I've made a mistake by not talking about the case as if I didn't know about it, which is sort of ludicrous. But up to this point, Norman, as you know, every film, book, article, video, even live event has focused on Mumia's case. And as a filmmaker, you know, the number one sin you can do is make a film about something that's already been done and done over and over and over again. I needed to find a story that wasn't told. And the story that wasn't told was the story of Mumia's life and times as a writer, a journalist, and a revolutionary, both before incarceration and after incarceration. And it's a remarkable story of a man whose body of work, you know, 7 published books from death row, more than 3,000 recorded essays that have been all over the world. And this is from a public intellectual that has never been on a computer, has limited access to books and journals, almost no access to television. It's rather remarkable, and the film focuses on the work that he does from a dark, dank hole on death row. And as a filmmaker, that's gold. But you know, some of the critics want me to, you know, yell and scream about December 9th, 1981 and what happened that night. And that's just not what the film is about.
You're listening to Diasporic Music, and I'm speaking with Stephen Victoria, the filmmaker of Long Distance Revolutionary, a new film about Mumia Abu-Jamal. Now, Mumia is very much into music, and he's very much into languages. I've heard him deliver greetings in French and German, and heard him speak a little Swahili. Could you talk about Mumia, music-wise as well as languages? How many languages can he speak?
Well, I believe he speaks French, Spanish, very, very well. I don't know if it's fluent, but it's fairly incredible. His grasp of the language. He can also speak a bit of German. He said he can speak a bit of Swahili, and as we know, he has mastered the English language, so he is a master communicator.
In terms of, he was studying some instruments at one time. I know I've heard him sing. He sounds like, I remember him singing some of R. Kelly stuff. He was criticizing R. Kelly, although he said he recognizes R. Kelly's talent, but he was talking about the song about the Jeep. You remind me of my Jeep. I think he really cut loose on R. Kelly. But is he doing anything musically in terms of, like he said, he was going to be recording?
Yeah, he actually is. He has regular music lessons. At least he did when he was at SCI Green, which was just outside of Pittsburgh. A sister there by the name of Bariki was going in every Tuesday and working on voice lessons and singing lessons. And Mumia has been writing music. And we have to remember, he's writing music without a keyboard, without a musical instrument. It's rather remarkable. I guess it's very similar, Norman, to writing a incredible personal history of the Black Panther Party without a computer, without a library, interviewing people by mail. And so he has adapted to what the state has forced him to live under, the repressive apparatus that he exists in. And the music is the same way, but he loves music. I've heard him sing. We were doing an interview the other night with the Huffington Post, and he just kind of broke into song. And with Cornel West the other day, we were doing an interview, and he broke into song. I think it's there's without a doubt music in his heart, and it's coming out. So You know, the state has managed to silence him. In fact, as Tariq Ali says in our film, the United States government has moved heaven and earth to silence Mumia Abu-Jamal. But the song is still sung, not unlike his slave ancestors who use their, you know, their spirituals and their songs to lift their hearts under, you know, the terrorism of American slavery. So, and I think Mumia very much believes that he is following in the footsteps of his ancestors and continuing to fight the current day slavery, which is mass incarceration in the United States. And the film deals with that subject strongly, the connection between Mumia and Frederick Douglass, the connection between Mumia and his ancestors, and what that means, you know, what the battle of Nat Turner means to Mumia and his battle against the state repression. So it's that's why I think the film is so much different than just a regurgitation of the facts of the case, which once you get into, you will clearly see that the state of Pennsylvania has imprisoned an innocent man.
Now, let me ask you, in terms of the whole question of enslaved Africans, Mumia dedicated his first book, I think, to Curtis Mayfield and Bob Marley. He mentioned them, pardon me. But
right.
I find it very interesting that Mumia was so much into Caribbean, African music from the Caribbean as well as Africa. How does he write? Does he write by hand, or does he have a typewriter, or is everything handwritten?
Everything is handwritten. Lately, he got his hands on something, and Norman, I don't really know what it is. I've been trying to find out, and it's hard for Mumia to explain what it is because I'm not sure he knows, but it's called a non-impact typewriter. I think it's all plastic. You know, the prison is really over the top with some of their internal security stuff. Like when he was writing with a pen, they refused to give him the outside plastic part. He could just write with that rubbery inside piece that holds the ink. And, you know, and he had calluses on his fingers that were, at the end of his fingers, were almost the size of another small finger. But that's the fierceness in which Mumia conducts his craft, and no one is going to stop him. Whether he's in solitary confinement or in the hole, he will continue to write. But the music, I believe, he also writes by hand. And I know some folks have been trying to get a keyboard into him, and maybe at some point they'll be successful at actually doing that. So he can push that even further. But I know when I, Norman, when I listened to early recordings that Mumia made back in the mid to late 70s when he was a reporter for National Public Radio in Philadelphia and All Things Considered, he interviewed Bob Marley. He interviewed a number of musical artists. And I can tell you at that point, he had a real affinity for Caribbean music, for reggae, and for rock and roll. I know he loved Jimi Hendrix, and I think Mumia's musical palette is pretty wide. In fact, I think he even enjoys opera. And when he gets a chance,
he likes tennis too.
He loves the Williams sisters for sure. But we've talked a lot about Muhammad Ali. We've talked a lot about Tommy Smith and John Carlos. I know he has a great relationship with the radical sports journalist in the United States, Dave Zirin, who writes for The Nation and Edge of Sports. And in fact, Mumia has written some stuff with Dave that has appeared in a couple of Dave's books. So, you know, I sent Mumia a book about the old Negro leagues in the United States and the Latin American leagues, you know, in the world of baseball, and he absolutely loved that. So his world is a really wide spectrum. He is not just focused on what would be considered classic politics and you know, the body politic. He has a very wide range of interests and goals, and he writes about that as well. You will see him writing about you know, people, like you said, like people like Marley and others like that.
Yeah, I sent him a copy of a book by Max Stanford, Muhammad Ahmed, See You in the Whirlwind, about the struggle of, you know, it was a book about the revolutionary, about RAM, the Revolutionary Action Movement, the Black Panther Party, the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, and SNCC. And Mumia wrote he did two commentaries about it. So, yeah. And I really would like to be reunited with him, so I could really would like to get him on this particular show. But I know that's problematic because you have to get him at a certain time and so on and so forth. But let's talk about the film in terms of who is in the film. I know Reuben Carter is, and one of my, I'm a very secular person, but I consider my minister to be my pastor, James Cohn. He's in the film, right?
He sure is, and he graces the film. You know, I really wanted Dr. Cohn to be in the film because his take on African American history is and African history and especially religion and heritage and culture is, as you know, almost second to none. And he has some incredibly poignant moments in the film, as does Cornel West. I've told folks if I didn't shut the camera off, Cornel would still be talking right now. He just really loves his brother Mumia Abu-Jamal and really was able to put Mumia's life and work in context. Angela Davis is in the film. The great Pulitzer Prize winning author Alice Walker, Tariq Ali, Peter Coyote, Giancarlo Esposito, Aya De Leon, the great spoken word poet from Berkeley, California, Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, the great rock and roll band, was able to supply us with some music, which is a some think it's a really odd choice, and some think it's a kind of a brilliant choice. I guess when you make choices like that, that's what's going to happen. We got some great hip hop music from the album Mumia 911 that a number of artists came together. A number of rap and hip hop artists came together to do this piece for Mumia, and it's an extraordinary piece of music that's in the film. So there are a host of folks. We also have a host of ex-Black Panthers from back in the day, like the great artist Emery Douglas, Barbara Cox Easley, the late great Reggie Shell, who was Mumia's captain in the Black Panthers in Philadelphia. We were fortunate enough to interview him before he passed away. But probably, Norman, my favorite interview in the entire film is not a famous person, but it's a very important person, and that was Mumia's sister, Lydia Barashanko. And
she came to Toronto. Yeah, she was a very beautiful human being, right?
She did, and unfortunately, she passed away just shortly after we interviewed her, but she was spectacular. She had been battling cancer, and she was spectacular the day that we interviewed her, and she really... she really upheld the legacy of her baby brother and talked about his early days in Philly, and you could see the budding journalist, the budding revolutionary, the budding compassionate writer who felt the pain of other people, and not his own pain, but wrote about, you know, as he's been called, the voice of the voiceless. And she just did a marvelous job. And the really nice thing about DVDs, because, you know, you can't put everything in a movie or the movie would be 10 hours long. On the DVD, which comes out on June 11th, we're going to have extended interviews with a lot of these folks in the film, and the audience will get a chance to see a much deeper discussion of Mumia by these people, of things that I just, for a practical reason, couldn't fit in the film. And Lydia's extended interview will be... will really be something to behold, I guarantee you.
Are there any tapes or videos of Mumia's mother anywhere?
No, I had just a couple of photographs, Norman. I had asked Mumia and Lydia and other folks in his family you know, Keith and his son Jamal to, you know, they were very easygoing when it came to handing over, you know, photographs and you know, that's just a treasure for a documentary filmmaker. But because, quite frankly, I think it was an economic thing, because Mumia's family was incredibly poor growing up in Philadelphia, poor economically, not poor socially. They were an incredibly warm and rich family from that standpoint. But, you know, they lived in the projects, and, you know, having an 8mm camera back then, or a 16mm camera, wasn't quite as easy as it is taking video right now with telephones.
Right, right.
And, so we could not find anything, unfortunately.
Now, how much travel did Mumia actually do? I know he spent some time on the West Coast, and he went to school. I forgot where he went to school. Where did he go to school?
He went to college in Goddard, Vermont.
In Vermont. Okay, that
right.
Was predominantly. Vermont is that's white on white in white, right, in terms of the population.
Yeah, it sure was. It was a real, at the time, it was a real hippie school, and he really
right.
he really fit in, and we kind of went into that, because very few people realize that back after his days as a Panther, he sort of transferred his feel and his look into the, you know, that the classic late 60s, early 70s, you know, hippie mentality. And I think you will see that in the film when you see him at Goddard and like that. I mean, he was, he sort of had that persona. I think he respected the revolutionary goals of that group as well.
But has he ever been outside the United States?
You know, I don't believe so. I know he spent a good amount of time in Oakland with the Panthers, and he spent a good amount of time in New York City. And I think he did some traveling down south, because that's where his mom is from, North Carolina.
North Carolina, right,
yeah.
Right.
And up in Vermont. But I do not believe he ever left the United States. You know, I'm going to end, the next time I talk, I'm going to ask him that question. But and I may have already asked him that, but I just don't remember. But I don't ever remember reading, and I did an amazing amount of research on his life, not only myself, but through other people. And that never came up. I don't believe he ever left the States.
We have about 3 minutes left, so you can, if you're a hip-hop artist, you can do some freestyling if you want, whatever you wanted to add in concluding this interview.
Well, I think, and Norman, thank you very much for having me on talking about the film. The film opens in L.A. On March 1. If you want to find out more about the film, folks, go to mumia-themovie.com. Mumia-themovie.com. You can go on Facebook under Long Distance Revolutionary. Make sure you like us, and you could follow the film that way. But the most important thing, I think, about this film, and the subtitle is A Journey with Mumia Abu-Jamal, is it truly is a journey through this man's life with him. And it's a celebration of his courage. It's unfortunately a celebration of the tragedy that he's had to go through and overcome. The celebration comes through the fact that he has overcome the tragedy. We have to remember that many of us still want Mumia to be out of that prison. You know, he makes it look so easy sometimes that some people fall into the trap that it's okay that he's there. Well, it's not okay that he's there, and he needs to be on the outside. He needs to be fighting on the outside. And if you take anything from the film, I would take this, that especially as Americans, we've been offered an ongoing diet of war and violence and economic rape and racism. And Mumia's life and his writings and his words offer us the alternative to that. He offers us peace over war. He offers us health care over no care. And he offers us economic freedom over economic rape of Wall Street and the 1%. So that's ultimately what the movie's about. The movie's about peace over war and understanding what compassion and love, which are the real elements of a revolutionary, can do. And Mumia truly is a long-distance revolutionary.
All right. I hope to see you on Wednesday in Los Angeles. I hope to meet you there.
You sure will, and I hope you come out on the weekend to see the film.
I will definitely do that. And thank you very much.
Norman, thank you very much.
Thank you. We have been speaking with Stephen Victoria.
Who's that girl? Who's that girl? Tantalizing me, nighttime when I'm feeling sleepy, she's there in front of me. The girl with the maxi booty, just walk up your fantasy. Island girl, how the boom she bouncing so boy, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. Island girl, look behind, she got it going on, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. Island girl, how the boom she bouncing so by, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. Island girl, look behind, she got it going on, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. She has the right size and figure, could make her a movie star. But sometimes I just wonder if the girl going too far. Then when they focus the camera, it's there for all to see, heating up my desire with all what she's showing me. Island girl, how the boom she bouncing so boy, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. Island girl, look behind, she got it going on, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. Island girl, how the boom she bouncing so boy, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy. Island girl, look behind, she got it going on, whiny whiny, boom boom looking sexy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Y'all ain't ready. turn it up. Yeah, know how we do it, yeah. Worldwide.
I know you know why I got it like that, right. Moves I make quick, you might not spot me on the track.
Never.
Losers hate this, so they copy in the facts. Wanna use against me, they tryna stop me in my tracks. Now they wanna act like they don't plot attacks. Keep on faking jacks like a nigga won't react. Fuck a review, cause the hood got my back. My music reaches everywhere, they wish they could do that, right? Just be real like you brought a cypher skill. You can't hide what you feel, you know you love it if that deal. The way I manage the skill to damage you niggas so ill. You get held to that will and chopped up like my sampling skills. A loose neck like in a Hamilton deal. Bring you to a standstill like a mannequin chill. Man, it's for real, I roll with champion skills. You can't be for real, the pose, the beats and the flows, it's L.E. We on that real right. Shit,
you gotta love
that
it.
Real shit is what we feel,
right? Real.
You gotta love
I
it.
I think you know what the deal
that's
is.
Right.
You gotta feel this.
Yeah, gotta love it, dog. You can't be it.
Yeah, we on that real
right.
Shit. You gotta love
that
it.
Real shit is what we feel,
right?
You gotta love
I
it.
I think you know what the deal
that's
is.
Right.
You gotta feel
yeah.
this.
Gotta love it, dog. You can't be
yeah.
it.
Yeah, Magnet team, it just shot the game. Niggas drop jaws when we drop the name. Chicks drop drawers when we drop the game. Supply you with the heat that'll rock your frame. No matter what you think, we not the same. Don't matter what deal you ain't put niggas to shame. Get props non-stop, too hot for flame. On top till I drop, can't stop the rain. Them L.E. niggas, oh them niggas is flawless. Heavy fucking hitters, ain't no niggas is falling. One hit a quitter, leave a nigga retarded. Ask any nigga who banged the best. From East Coast to West Coast to Bangladesh. He toast or he ghost and he lame contest. When shit hit the fam and he blamed the best. Picked up and ran, then came the rest.
We on that real right. shit, you gotta love
that
it.
That real shit is what we feel,
right?
Real, you gotta love
I
it.
I think you know what the deal
that's
is.
That's right,
you gotta feel this.
Yeah, gotta love it, dog. You can't beat it.
Yeah, we on that real right. shit, you gotta love
that
it.
That real shit is what we feel,
right?
Rough, you gotta
rough
love
draft.
I think you know what the deal
that's
is.
That's right,
you gotta feel this.
Yeah, gotta love it, dog. You can't beat it. Got the budget calling JB there. Got the rugged all day even. I stay weeded, we all in 8-seaters. You don't wanna take me there, it ain't genius. It ain't me to bust my brains. All blocker, blocker once I aim. It's baddie, baddie, the front's got fangs. Be motherfuckin' trying not to cuss I can't. Shit, you probably thinking the bleeps is a part of the beat. But these just keeping it hard for the streets, nigga. Pay J production, bar for G's. You can charge it to the game, but save all of the seats. Yeah, we the ones that came in all of the Jeeps. We like, the bigger the whip, the taller the feet. What's on the hip could finish the start of a beef. I know you want your heart to beat, well don't start it with me. It's still
we on that real right.
yeah.
You gotta love
that
it.
Real shit is what we feel,
right?
Real. You gotta love
I
it.
I think you know what the deal
that's
is.
That's right.
You gotta feel
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Gotta love it, dog. You can't be
yeah.
it.
We on
turn
that
it.
Real shit.
Right.
You gotta love
it.
That real shit is what we feel,
right? right.
You gotta love
I
it.
I think you know what the deal
that's
is.
That's right.
You gotta feel
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
Gotta love it, dog. You can't be
yeah.
it. Gotta love it, dog. You can't